Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome back to the Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast, supported by, powered by, sponsored by Lacolle, here with Benji Nyssen on a pretty standard Tuesday afternoon. We've just watched Criterium du Dauphiné Stage 3, the Intercontinental Intermediate Mid-Season Climby Sprinty Boy Championships on this finish. It's the perfect one for it. 172 Ks, got some climbs in the middle of the first half of the stage that won't bother any of the guys here, and then rolling hills that also won't bother anyone. And it's all about the final 3Ks of this race. A bit tricky too. There's like a hairpin, 270-degree left-hand turn with 2.2Ks to go that GC contenders will want to be careful to be in the front wheels for in case there's a crash in that corner. It's wide at least. And the final is difficult. It's one of those ones that it was more difficult than it seemed. 2.3Ks at 3.5%, but the last 700 meters, as Benji said, 5.7 to 6% average gradient, which is not false flat at all. We had Aramburu, Coldbrelli, Askren as favourites, but if it's harder, Kwiatkowski and Valverde as pure puncheurs should be in with a shout for this stage. But we had a break, Benji, and I saw the break. I was like, they can't win. And I was like, holy shit! I said that the last 2 days, but today they really couldn't win, right?
Yeah, that's true. Loic Vliegen and Omri Goldschien were in the breakaway. And in all honesty, those riders are not necessarily the ones that are going to bring it home with two in the breakaway, because Loic Vliegen's a strong rider, through the Wallonie last year as well. Also did decent on some Ardennes races as well already. And I think in Provence, he also did a pretty good run. But all in all, that break wasn't going to make it if the peloton actually decided to decently pace today. And it seems like they did. They learned their lesson of the last 2 days, and they did put people at the front end, which teams were mainly trying to get their breakaway caught so that their candidate for the stage victory could go for it.
Well, it wasn't Bahrain too much today. I think they were justifiably a bit miffed. I would have been if I was them over the last 2 days, no one helping them. Bora were pacing a fair bit, actually. I think Bora were keen on Perstelberger retaining the yellow jersey for an additional day. So they were showing out at the front quite a lot. Tony Martin was getting some reps in pre-Tour de France on the front. No sunnies, of course, despite the blazing sunshine. Ineos, it was pretty much a whole a team effort from everybody. Lotto Soudal as well, particularly late. They almost caught the break by default. They were all fanned out across the road. It wasn't single file all day like when Haller was pacing yesterday. So pretty much a team effort. And what I was really interested in for this finish was who was going to ride for who. Was Nyssen and Van Avermaet, were they going to set up Venturini, or was everyone going to ride for themselves? Would Yonny Zagira try and lead out Aramburu? Would Michael Bjerg, was he on lead out duties? He was doing a good job, the young Dane on UAE, but was he riding for Christoph or McNulty? And would Ineos free Kwiatkowski? And we got the answer pretty quickly. So Vliegen and Goldschien were caught. Vliegen went up the road, I think, trying to get the competitivity prize, caught with 20Ks to go, and they were pretty much quick run in, really quick run in. And then actually there was a crash before we get to the finish. There was a crash, Benji. Do you actually see what caused that?
I didn't see what caused it, because we had a helicopter shot right at that moment and there were trees in the way, and we saw a few riders lying on the ground at the back. And the most notable candidate lying on the ground was Guillaume Martin, who actually had a bit of a rip in his shirt at the back. So definitely was one of the riders that hit the ground. And he instantly had two teammates waiting for him. So as leader, that's a normal thing. They were looking after him. They were checking, is his bike okay? Okay, we don't need to give a bike. And the second that he was back on the bike, they pushed extremely hard to bring that back. And because of this crash, there was actually a bit of a split going on in the peloton. And Guillaume Martin was caught in the second group accordingly, trying to bring that second group back. And it wasn't until like a few kilometers before that hill started near the end that Guillaume Martin was brought back to the group. So a bit of a last-minute save. Crash didn't happen in the last 3 kilometers, so they had to save it. And in all honesty, Cofidis did what they had to bring Guillaume Martin back in the group to keep him in contention for GC, and they did that perfectly because, well, in that front group, we saw not necessarily that one team was pacing the front group. It was, I think, multiple teams like in a row, a lot of trains next to each other, but the most notable one was perhaps the one that is just trying to keep their leader safe, and that's Ineos. They always do this, and this time around, they were doing that again. Did you think that there was a chance that they would let Mr. Polish Kwiat off his leash today?
No, I didn't. When I saw their formation, I didn't think they would. Before I finish that thought, I just want to mention I saw there's two things from our show partner, Lacolle, that I want to mention before they run out. Firstly, LRCP20 for 20% off at checkout. That's the Giro code. It's going to expire pretty shortly. So if you want to get 20% discount, you can do that without doing any extra effort. But there's also the Lacolle McLaren Project Aero Strava Challenge, which means you have to do a little bit of work. You can go into a draw to win the complete Lacolle McLaren Project Aero collection if you ride 160Ks or receive a £50, which is like, I don't know how many euro, Benji. I only know pounds and AUD. It's like 80, 100, 200. I don't know how many Australian dollars that is. Maybe someone can comment down below how much that is. But you can receive that as well for the Lacolle McLaren Project Aero Strava Challenge. But on Ineos, speaking of Britain and Lacolle, I saw their formation. It was Amador. Then he was flicking, I think, Rodriguez. Oh, Rodriguez was at the back. Gegenhardt was at the back. And then it was Kwiatkowski. And they basically used Kwiatkowski for Thomas. But then I thought, well, okay, maybe they're thinking Thomas, he's got like the track background. He has a quick finish sometimes. If he goes with like 800 meters to go and catches people napping, maybe that's what they're trying to set up. But it was mostly to me trying to keep Thomas in the first five wheels through the left-hand corner at 2.2. And then it got really hairy. And it's a weird finish. It's weird because there's no defined sprint leadouts. There's no team with three guys with 2Ks to go, which isn't even that many in a sprint leadout, but there's no teams with three guys leading out with 2Ks to go. There's no consistent team taking control. It's like Lotto with one rider, bring Wellens forward, and then the domestique drops off. Bjerg brings McNulty and Christoph forward, then he drops off. And it was really, I think Bora were trying to keep Purstelberg up there in case there was a split. And all that hairiness, and it's a wide road, but there's still fights for position. There was a bit of a coming together between, I think, Schwarzman and Colbrelli with about 1,700 meters to go, where I think the back wheel of Quickstep rider moves across and pushes Schwarzman to the right. He then nearly chops Colbrelli, and then Colbrelli reacts similarly to the way Bennett did to Quintana, not as bad, by shoulder checking Schwarzman in his right hip. Why was that move so dangerous, Benji? And why are these moves like that have the potential to bring down the whole bunch?
Well, if you're in that position like Schwarzman was, he was just checked on the left side, forcing him to the right side. He's trying to keep his balance between multiple riders. And then if Colbrelli takes a bit of a subtle revenge by trying to pass him and use his shoulder to try and move him to the left, then it can be very dangerous because, well, Schwarzman can be the best bike handler in the world, but if people keep pushing you, at some point it's going to become dangerous. And that push actually pushed him way more to the left than I would anticipate with a push. Colbrelli's not a small guy, so I'm pretty sure if I get shouldered by Colbrelli on a bike, I'd be in the ditch 2 seconds later. But Schwarzman actually had to, he deviated a bit, well, because of the shoulder barge into his right side. And that caused, well, a lot of upset with the riders behind, because him moving to the left causes the other rider to have to react, and then the other rider needs to react, and then another rider needs to react. And just like that, 12 riders had to go for a different line than initially planned. And if one of those riders does not react fast enough, then a portion of the peloton is going down then. So Colbrelli with a dangerous maneuver there, in all honesty. And eventually the race continued onwards from that point.
He didn't get disqualified. I think Schwarzman came up the right-hand side. We didn't see, but he looked like he was about to have some pretty stern words with Colbrelli. And we've got a weird finish. It's, as I said, 700 meters at about 6%. And it's actually Aaron Baru, who jumps super early, the Astana rider, Benji's favorite rider, jumps early, gaps everybody else. And I think it was Kwiatkowski beforehand who was leading out, and Kwiatkowski was done, but no one was willing to take it up because he's got Colbrelli on his wheel. He's got such a big distance to the line, and Thomas doesn't want to accelerate from there. Maybe he didn't have the legs. And yeah, Aaron Baru jumps on the left-hand side. Colbrelli, seeing no one closing to Aaron Baru, jumps to his wheel, or not immediately, by the way. He's having to do it in the wind. And that's the correct decision, because this is like one of those moments where, oh, wow, he had the best legs today, but he came second just because he didn't make the right decision in that moment. Colbrelli might have thought someone else closed this because we've still got so far to the finish, but he didn't. He jumped across to Aaron Baru's wheel. Aaron Baru's weaving around, trying to deny the drag. Eventually, Colbrelli goes around, and it's like the definition of a punch up to this finish. It was harder than we anticipated. They seem to be going much slower, like they're throwing the bikes all over the place, and Colbrelli comes around Aaron Baru. We saw 50 meters to go. I was like, oh, they're about to cross the finish line. There's still seemingly another 10 seconds left, and Colbrelli wins easily. Once again, the man with the best legs in the finish 3 days in a row, second, and today first, finally, after there was no breakaway. So a really dominant win from Colbrelli. What I want to ask, Benji, I'll do the top 10 first. Sorry, I always do this. Make this mistake. I'll ask Benji the question. Colbrelli first, Aaron Baru second, big gap after Aaron Baru, Brandon McNulty third. This is why this is such a bizarre finish. This top 10 is so odd. McNulty third, Sturven fourth, Kelderman fifth, Venturini sixth, Barbero, Russo, Wellens, Askren 10th. The big man missing out is Valverde in 11th. I mean, looking at how hard this finish was, I can't believe he didn't come top three, particularly when you see McNulty up there and Kelderman in fifth. He's got better punch than them, one would think. But my question is, Benji, to you, is Colbrelli a different level this year? He's not a man that's won a lot of World Tour races regularly in the past. Romdy has won, and he's won here. Is he a different level, or are we just missing riders like Alaphilippe, Alphonart, Mathieu van der Poel, who one would think would be cleaning him up on this sort of finish?
Well, a combination of both. First of all, it feels like he's finally found what he wants to try and ride for these punchy, hilly stage sprints. And he actually mentioned that, I think, a few weeks ago in an interview, that he feels like he might have finally found what he's good at. But I've got the feeling that we've known for quite a while that he can do this. I think he won Brabantse Pijl 4 or 5 years ago. I don't remember which year, but that was impressive. A group of eight with the likes of Philippe Gilbert when he was still at a top, well, a decent hilly level. And Colbrelli just basically destroyed that group in the final sprint after them being the stronger riders in that stage, basically hill-wise. And it's not the first time. I just feel like he's tried a lot to be a pure sprinter in just flat finishes, and he's played out a lot like that. He's also played out a lot in hilly sprints, and so far that has been always his best quality in my eyes. I think that his problem is that at what he does, there's a lot of riders that are now shining. Van Aert, like you said, Van der Poel. So that's a bit of a combination. He found what he needs to try for, but he's also got the problem that there's a lot of people that can do what he does, and quite a few of them do it better. Nonetheless, I really enjoy seeing Colbrelli. I feel like he's one of the sprinters that can climb the best just in general over hills. It's not necessarily just a final hilly sprint. He can also get over hills, and that's just compared to, for example, Fabio Jakobsen, who is still on his comeback. But I think the Koenig said this morning that this is a stage they're going to pull Jakobsen for. But when I looked at the parcours, when I knew what the finish was like, there's no way in hell that Jakobsen can finish here in the top five unless he suddenly is a puncher, which is unlikely. So I find that a very weird choice by de Koenig on this stage, for example, while a team like Bahrain knows that with Colbrelli, they've got a perfect option to try and take the stage here. And Colbrelli was by far the strongest today. I think Aramburu, I'm not sure what to think about him going early yet.
He's just the version of Colbrelli. They're very similar riders. I think Aaron Baru's a better climber than Colbrelli.
I think he's a worse sprinter.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Flat sprinter, Cold Braley is quicker, but Aaron Brew's got a bit something different to his game. I think Cold Braley and Matthews are very similar sort of riders. And when I mentioned, I'm looking at his Palmares, Cold Braley now, Benji, he hadn't won a World Tour race since 2018, Tour de Suisse Stage 3. And then Romandy was his first World Tour race. Now Dauphiné, probably his biggest ever stage race win, I think. Brabantse Pijl's not World Tour, but I kind of rate that more almost.
Did he never win a Giro stage?
He's never won a Giro d'Italia stage.
Wasn't he the guy that got bossed in like the last 100 meters by somebody? I swear I remember that. If anybody can remind us of that, a Giro stage where Cobrelli got bossed in Bardiani days. Okay.
This is where I was saying your name because he hasn't done the Giro since 2016. You look at the stages Ulissi has won at the Giro d'Italia. You look at the type of finishes the Giro has. Even at Tirreno Adriatico, remember that 3-kilometer weird stage that, the one that was kind of uphill draggy he would have been perfect for? He's done the Tour de France 17, 18, 19, 20. It just seems like his palmares have been ruined a little bit by being sent to the wrong races. It doesn't suit him. He's been a worse version of Sagan, right? At the Tour, he's not as good as someone like Sagan. So even if there's a perfect stage for him, Peter Sagan, who's like, yeah, or the Vuelta, he's done the Vuelta zero times. So I feel like this is maybe a topic for the off season. Someone write it down. Rider palmares and race allocation for riders can have a massive influence on how much they win. And we're seeing here that, you know, at the Dauphiné with these sort of finishes for Cold Braley, perfect for him, the Giro, we think. What Aaron Brew, Benji, what do you think is his sort of upside? Do you think he's a stage racing attacker? He won it from Basque Country from like an attack, not really a sprint. Is he a worse version of Cold Braley or different, as you said?
I think he is pretty all-round because we've had that stage in, I think it was Provence where Ballerini won on an uphill section at the end in a sprint. Aaron Brew came third, if I recall correctly, in that stage, which means that this type of stage like today is definitely within his book. This is what he can do. But so far, he's always found someone that is better in the races that he's doing it in. And he's also an attacker because in the Vuelta, he's gone into multiple breakaways before. He's very attacking in that sense. He's got the qualities in descending to try and ride away in the last 2 kilometers from a group. But the problem is that every single time, he seems to run into someone that is better than him at what he's doing. But with the growth that he's showing since the days that he came from Caja Rural, it's insane. Like, I'm expecting more from him. And I think that Aaron Brew, like, bias aside, genuinely, I believe that Aramburu can win a Vuelta stage, and I believe that Aramburu is perfect to send to every Vuelta in his career, just like Colbrelli should have gone to a Vuelta by now, because Aramburu will likely do so because he's Spanish. So I'm guessing that as a consequence, he will likely be in the Vuelta quite a lot of times in his career mode. In his career. Wow.
What's crazy, Benji. You're talking about race allocation. I think Cold Braley is better than Magnus Cort. I think he's quicker than him. I think he's generally been better than Magnus Cort. But Magnus Cort gets sent to the right races. He's got at least three Vuelta stage wins. He's got a Tour de France stage win, Paris-Nice stage wins, multiple, including this year. He's just a guy that they send him to the right races when he's on EF and previously at Astana, and he's able to win those climby sprinty boy sprints like Cold Braley today. But that's probably enough on climbing sprinty boys. Tomorrow is the TT, 17 k's long, 320 meters of elevation gain in this TT. It is constantly up and down. We have an intermediate time check, 7.5 k's in. The climbs are 700 meters 6%, 2.4 k's 4.5%, little rolling ridgeline, then a k at 4%, 1.4 k's at 4% to finish. I see this clearly between two riders for the stage, McNulty and Thomas, Benji. I've got McNulty slightly ahead. Ooh, who's your pick?
I'm going to say Kasper Asgreen as my pick for the stage. He had a good time trial in that race that he did where Hayter won that climb. Was it Algarve where he won the time trial, Asgreen? he's done good rolling hills time trials in the past. Thomas, indeed, and the other pick you just mentioned, McNulty, are ideal for this. But I feel like Asgreen should be mentioned definitely as a potential co-favorite, personally.
That's a good call. I was saying, what the fuck are you thinking? And I look at, he's in the last month, he's won this Algarve TT, 20Ks long. It's got a climb 600 meters at 5.3% and 500 meters at 7.2%. I dare say it doesn't have as much climbing as tomorrow's. It's got more two punches. But yeah, Asgreen, that was a 51K an hour average TT. I just think McNulty at Basque was lovely. He beat Thomas at Catalunya in the TT. So if he hadn't, and I'm basing it because he came third today. Because if he hadn't come third today, I would have been like, oh, what's his motivation like? What's his legs like? Stage one got dropped. I know he had the mechanical, came back, but still not good signs. But third today, he's clearly up for it. He's never won a World Tour race. He hasn't won since, I think, Giro di Sicilia GC in a stage in 2019. He'll be wanting to get a World Tour win. And I think, yeah, McNulty tomorrow. And Thomas for GC, surely Barton? Thomas.
Will
Barton?
Yeah,
I mean, he's a good shout as well. Kelderman has done good TTs already for Bora Hansgrohe. Mikael Björk. What about Björk, Benji?
I don't know if it's too hard for him, the hilly aspect of it, but he's definitely a good TTer. It's just been a while since I've seen Mikael Björk in the top results in TTs.
It's but similar to the Yorkshire one that he won. I know it was indeed. Under 23.
Like, similar. The thing is, like, time trialists like Pedersen and such, he crashed out today, I think. He is not finished today's stage. So him on that parkour likely, I think, wouldn't have climbed that well. But if you look at it, I dare to say also potentially look at Josef Czerny as a bit of an outsider for the stage. And
Richie.
Those are kind of in it. Richie Port, yeah, could do well, but I don't see him winning.
So Catalunya, he came sixth in the TT, and that was a bit rolly. And he was, let's see, 5-6 seconds behind Almeida and McNulty. And then Thomas had a bad TT. I think he was like 13 seconds behind Richie Port. So, yeah, maybe Thomas wasn't motivated. But, yeah, I see it as Port and Thomas will be the best of the GC men, in my view. And Kelderman probably the third. Kruijswijk, I mean, Kruijswijk did a good TT at Catalunya too. I don't know. I think it'll be a really interesting time trial. Just more data points ahead of the Tour de France. Another rolly TT, similar to some of the ones we've got in the Tour. It's just an interesting TT. But I'll be going with McNulty, but I don't know what the betting odds will say about that. But, yeah, Dauphiné's been better today and more interesting tomorrow. And then after the, last two stages. And then we've got the mountains coming up. We've got some nasty mountains.
And then Tour de Suisse. And then Slovenia, perhaps, if Roglic actually flies over there suddenly.
Well, apparently Mathieu van der Poel's doing the Tour de Suisse, Benji. I didn't know that. But van der Poel's doing Swiss. Cool. And maybe Pidcock, so he or she will be doing it. So, I mean, if anyone's got a spare moment, you've had a look, Benji. What's the parkour looking like at Swiss?
Well, I haven't looked at every stage, but I know that stage 6 and 8 are pretty heavy mountain stages. And those ones are special because one takes the same parkour from the one side and the other one just goes in the opposite direction and takes the entire parkour as well. So it's kind of really fun to see the San Gotardo climb that we saw in Tour de Suisse also before, I think, the finish in Andermatt on stage 8. So looking forward to that. But first of all, let's try and enjoy Dauphiné as a separate buffet.
Indeed. All right, we'll see you with the recap of the TT tomorrow, everybody. Ciao.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.